I have a mentor called Gustav Hallegraaff who studies phytoplankton in Tasmania, and he came to Australia from Europe. His parents, I think, thought he was mad coming over here to study some tiny, weeny, little microscopic thing that lives in the ocean. It almost brings me to tears that he turned around and he can now go back to his parents and say, I think I'm studying one of the most important organisms on this planet, and it could be the thing that saves us. Not only are they incredibly beautiful and intricate and delicate and diverse, I mean, the shapes are incredible, but they also have the most incredible significance for our global ocean.
This is Penelope Ajani from the Plant Functional Biology and Climate Change Cluster at the University of Technology, Sydney. As I was speaking to Penelope, she showed me a whole other world. The world of phytoplankton.
So these aren't the best pictures, but they just show you the diversity. I mean, they look like spaceships. And
dandelion.
I know that's quite a few people's favourite. Yeah,
it looks like that almost looks like a ceramic.
Yeah, oh, I know. See, I want to do fabric print. Someone said buttons. And, you know, I mean, the shapes are, yeah, they're phenomenal. They really are.
Penelope has worked as a marine scientist for a number of years and says the world of phytoplankton is the one she loves the most. But it's a world that is often forgotten.
It's one of those things that is just really available to someone who looks down the microscope in the first instance, I guess.
Yeah, it's just they're so small. So is that why they're overlooked?
Yeah, I guess so. But with global warming and, you know, as we understand the ocean more and the intricacies and complexity of the marine ecosystem, I think they've been, up until now, undervalued and understudied, and hoping that that changes.
If I had a $2 coin right here,
yeah,
how many phytoplankton would there be on that coin?
Oh, well, I can't say. Thousands. They range from sort of 10 microns up to 200 microns, and that's a thousandth of a centimetre. I mean, it depends if it's blooming or not. Again, if you take a bloom sample and you put it under the microscope, there's just millions. Yeah, you can see them and I can count them, and I'll tell you that a bloom might be 100,000 cells per litre or 500,000 cells per litre. I mean, they can go to the incredible numbers quickly, within days.
Phytoplankton are just one type of plankton organism among thousands and thousands of different species. But phytoplankton are in fact plants. So unlike animal species of plankton, such as zooplankton, they make their own food.
A lot of them carry out photosynthesis, just as plants do on the land. So they harness the light energy and they produce oxygen, which is 50% of the oxygen we breathe.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. That's a lot. So we can refer to that as every second breath you're taking is produced by the phytoplankton of the ocean.
And not only that, they're also the first level of the food chain.
They're then eaten by zooplankton, which are the tiny little crustaceans and things in the ocean. They're then eaten by the fish and the higher levels in the ocean. So these are at the bottom of the food chain. So they're vitally important to the marine ecosystem.
But sometimes phytoplankton can have an undesired effect on humans when they algal bloom. Now, not all blooms are bad. Sometimes they can do things like just discolour the water. But Penelope says it can be hard to figure out which algal blooms are which and which phytoplankton are algal blooming, because there are just so many different types of phytoplankton.
We don't really know why they produce toxins, but if they bloom in large numbers, they can cause problems into our food chain.
Because they're getting eaten by the bigger plankton.
Yeah.
Oh, right. It's that whole cycle.
Filter the water and accumulate the toxin. So the toxin doesn't hurt the phytoplankton. It probably doesn't hurt the oyster. But by the time it gets to us, it can make us very sick.
records on phytoplankton throughout history, Penelope says, can be quite inconsistent and sometimes very far in between. So figuring out whether they're affected by changing climate conditions can be difficult, but not impossible.
So with more extreme weather, so extreme floods and rains, we're going to get a lot more nutrient runoff from the coast, and those nutrients entering the waterways can trigger algal blooms. And there is signs around the world that increased nutrients, which is what we call eutrophication, is causing more species to bloom in coastal waters. But there's still, you know, kilometres and kilometres of the ocean that hasn't even been sampled yet. So there's vast areas that we don't even know what's there.
The information that marine scientists do have on phytoplankton are now all in one place, in an online database, and it's called the Australian Phytoplankton Database. It's also the main repository for marine data in Australia. The database is also publicly available online, so it means any marine researcher like Penelope can sign in to the Australian Ocean Data Network online and have access to a huge amount of data on phytoplankton throughout history, with some of the earliest info dating back to 1844.
Often they're just lists and sketches of phytoplankton. Some of these old studies were meticulous in the way they drew them and described them, some of which we know are very characteristic, and so we can link them to the exact same species that we can see today.
The database holds more than 3.5 million records of phytoplankton over the past two centuries, and these records provide a crucial insight into how these marine microalgae are changing over time.
If I decided to look at one particular species like Noctiluca, I could hop onto that website now, I could download all the Noctiluca data and have a look where it exists around Australia right now. And, you know, possibly in 20 years' time or 50 years' time, we can compare how that's changed. Has it grown in abundance? Has it changed its range around Australia?
And also, if not just as important, having these records compiled together helps us learn more about algal blooms.
I've been looking at blooms up in the Hawkesbury River. They occur up there near Barrow Waters. We have a couple of toxic species that keep occurring up there, and we're trying to use all the nutrient data, the salinity data, the temperature, rainfall, all the different conditions that could maybe cause it to bloom, and we're trying to work out under what conditions. And we come halfway, I think, to sort of saying, well, under warm conditions in the spring, you know, with this many nutrients, we can probably predict this particular type of species to bloom. But, you know, it's just such a complex system and changing all the time. I mean, you know, from the ocean, you can wake up beside the ocean and every day it's completely different and doing something different.
But at least now, phytoplankton are getting more of the attention they deserve, says Penelope.
They fascinate me. And, yeah, they are. They're the most incredibly beautiful structures. And not everyone gets to see them. That's what I find incredibly sad.